In the spring of 1971, one spring day in Chapel Hill, I was walking on the streets of Chapel Hill. Chapel Hill is only about two blocks. And I was walking down Chapel Hill, this nice warm spring day, very crowded day, with my dog. I had a German Shepherd, about an 80-pound German Shepherd named Noah. I don't know why I named him Noah, but I'd had him since he was a pup. And he got into a fight, a little dog fight, right in front of the weirdest man in the universe. Let me tell you about the weirdest man in the universe. The weirdest man in the universe was a man named Bob Eckhart. Bob Eckhart was a man in his 40s at the time who worked in Durham, about 8 miles away from Chapel Hill. But he would come to Chapel Hill every Saturday with his Econoline van, his white Econoline van. He had scripture verses written all over the side of his white Econoline van. He had two big megaphone speakers mounted on the roof of his van, connected up to a record player where he would play scratchy old 78 hymns and blast them down the street out of these two megaphones. He would stand out on the street corner of Chapel Hill handing out pamphlets about Jesus Christ, and he would do that along with his wife all day every Saturday. Now, he was not well received in Chapel Hill. People spit on him. People threw the tracts back at him. People cursed him out. People were incredibly nasty to this guy. But week after week after week that spring, I saw him down there. I avoided him. I didn't want to get near the man. This is like out of a circus or something. But anyway, that day, my dog got into a fight right in front of where he was standing. And I pulled my dog apart from the dog that he was mangling at the time. And this other guy helped, Bob Eckhart helped me a little bit. And so here I am now, eyeball to eyeball with the weirdest man in the world. What do you say to the weirdest man in the world? I mean, I didn't want to say something wrong. So I looked at him and I said, "Hi." And he went, "Hello." "Well, now what do you say?" So I said, "Gotta go." And he said, "Okay, see ya." And I went, "Okay." And off I went. The whole encounter could not have lasted 30 seconds. But I have to tell you, in those 30 seconds of being eyeball to eyeball, about 2 feet away from this man and looking in his eyes, I walked away and something inside of me said to me, "Lon, this guy has what you're looking for." You say, "How do you know that?" Friends, I can't tell you how I knew it. I don't have any empirical evidence. I can't put it in a test tube what I was feeling. But I'm telling you, I walked away and something inside of me said, "Lon, this guy's got what you're looking for. The peace, the contentment, the wholeness, the healthiness that you're looking for, he's got it." Man, that plagued me. I mean, that plagued me. But it also gave me some hope, because I have to tell you, folks, I had begun to wonder if anybody in the whole world had what I was looking for. I'd never met anybody who had answers to the questions that I was asking. My fraternity's brothers didn't. My drug buddies didn't. I didn't know anybody who had answers. I'd begun to think there are no answers to these questions. And suddenly, I met a man who gave me some hope. Maybe there really were some answers to these things. Well, for the next few weeks, I would wander by him and take his tracts. I wouldn't talk to him. I was too scared to talk to him. But I would take his little pamphlets that he was handing out. In fact, I developed a nice little stack of pamphlets home on my dresser. I didn't read them, but I took them because I felt bad for the guy. I mean, I felt like he's a sincere guy, and people are treating him nasty, and sincerity is at a premium, and somebody ought to at least be nice to him and take what he's given out. So I would take them and go home and stack them up. But I really wanted to talk to him. I just couldn't get up enough guts to do it. Finally, I decided, this is stupid. You just need to go talk to this guy. So I walked up to him one Saturday morning, spring of 1971. And I said, I'd like to come talk to you sometime. And he said, "Well, that would be wonderful." He said, "How about 3 o'clock this afternoon?" Now, I wasn't ready for that. You know, it's kind of like when you see somebody at church and you say, "Why don't you come over for lunch sometime?" And they go, "Fine, how about today?" That's not what you meant. And I didn't expect him to say today. I expected him to go, "Okay, in a month or so," and give me enough courage to, you know, time to work up some courage. He said, "Well, how about 3 o'clock this afternoon?" And I'm like, no, I can't do it this afternoon. I got something else to do. I got another appointment." Now, what kind of an appointment does a hippie have at 3 o'clock on a Saturday afternoon in Chapel Hill, North Carolina? I was lying through my teeth, friends. But I was scared. And now I was totally freaked out, and I said to him, look, I gotta go, maybe some other time, we'll talk another time. And I started walking down the street, and I got maybe 10, 12 yards down the street with my dog. Crowded day, streets packed in this warm spring day in Chapel Hill. And this guy cups his hands around his mouth, and he screams at me. I said to him, well, maybe I'll see you next week. And he screams at me, you may not be here next week. And I'm like, oh my goodness. I'm looking around trying to pretend like I don't know who he's talking to either. I don't want all these people knowing the weirdest man in the world's yelling at me. I don't even want him to know I've talked to him. So I hurried down the street. I ducked around the corner. I leaned up against the brick wall and I went, oh, that was the worst experience of my whole life. I can't believe I did that. But as I began walking around that day, you know, I began thinking, well, that guy's right. I've got no guarantee I'll be here next week. I'd already lost several high school friends. One had died in a motorcycle accident. One had died of a kidney infection. And I thought, well, you know, he's right. I might not be here next week. I should go talk to him. So 3 o'clock, I showed up. He was gone. I mean, he didn't know I was coming. So he finished up and he had left. This was awful. Because I felt like now this guy had laid a prophecy on me that I wasn't going to live for another week. Now, I know that sounds silly, but it's not silly. I mean, I was terrified that this guy had predicted my death. And the next week was the most horrible week of my entire life up to that point. A good friend of mine owned a motorcycle and let me ride it all the time. Didn't ride it that week. I didn't walk under ladders that week. God help me if a black cat walked in front of me. I looked both ways before I crossed the street deliberately. I climbed steps one at a time, holding onto the handrail. I was terrified. And that week finally went by, and next Saturday came, and I got up at the crack of dawn, which in those days about 10 o'clock in the morning, and I went down. I went downtown to see this guy. I don't know what would have happened if he hadn't come to town that day, but sure enough, faithful as ever, about 10:30, he came putting into town in this white Econoline circus van, and he got out of the van, and I walked over to him. I'd been sitting down waiting for him, and I walked over to him, and I said, look, because of you, I have just lived the worst week of my entire life. Now, we need to talk. And I said, there's got to be a sales pitch that goes with this thing you do here. I didn't know what to call it. I said, so give me the sales pitch. I'm willing to listen. Now, I should drop back and tell you one quick thing. During the middle of the week, I was so scared, I thought, I'm going to go buy a Bible. You got to understand, friends, dope pushers don't own Bibles. You understand? None of my dope pushing buddies own Bibles. None of my fraternity brothers own Bibles. You know, the lifestyle we live did not fit with owning a Bible. And so I thought, well, if I have a Bible, maybe I'll make it through the week, kind of like a talisman or something. So I went down to the bookstore in town to buy a Bible. I did not know how expensive Bibles were. I couldn't believe it. I was like, wow, that's an awful lot of money for a Bible. I only had about $5 to my name then. We were between dope shipments, and $5 was about all I had. I was eating scraps out of my fraternity house kitchen. I would serve the dinner, and then as my payment, they would let me eat the leftovers. I ate a lot of broccoli and a lot of cauliflower, not much steak. You understand what I'm saying? And so that's how I was surviving. Well, the cheapest Bible I could find was $3, a little tiny paperback. And I was standing in line to pay for it, and my friend, the one who had said to me, you know, maybe you're just getting more honest with you all the time, came by and saw me in line and came into the bookstore there, the university bookstore, and said, what are you doing? I said, I'm buying a Bible. He said, you what? I said, I'm buying a Bible. He said, what in the world would you do something like that for? And I told him a little bit about the kind of week I was having. And so as we're standing in line, he says to me, Lon, he says, now stop for a second, think. He said, if this God that you're worried about is so real, he said, don't you think he could give you a Bible without you having to spend 50% of your life savings on it? And I was standing there and I went, yeah, that sounds spiritual. That sounds real spiritual. I went, all right, that sounds good. And so I went and put the Bible back. Now, you need to know that because of what's going to happen now. Well, the next Saturday, I'm talking to this man. And so he takes out a Bible and he starts reading from it. He reads from the Old Testament. He reads from the New Testament. He began telling me Bible stories that most of you probably know, but I didn't know them. And he read me about Elijah and the prophets of Baal up on Mount Carmel. I thought that was the greatest story I'd ever heard in my whole life. I was like, this is a great story. He read me other things. We talked for about 2 hours. It was like water on a dry sponge. And at the end of 2 hours, he said to me, okay, now, are you ready to receive Jesus? And I'm like, excuse me? Are you ready to receive Jesus, he said. Well, I didn't even have a clue what that meant, but even the little bit I could kind of figure out what I thought it meant, I said to him, no. I said, hey, it's been fun talking to you, man, and this has been wonderful, but I'm Jewish. Jewish people don't do this. You know, Jewish people, we just don't do this. He said, well, sure, Jesus was Jewish. He said, do you realize that all the early followers of Jesus were Jewish? The whole early church was Jewish? Everybody who wrote the Bible, with the exception of Luke, was Jewish? I said, nah, come on. He went, yeah. He said, did you really know Peter was Jewish? I was like, you got to be kidding. He's like, no. I was like, really? Yeah. Well, I never knew this. Nobody ever told me Peter was Jewish. I figured he was, you know, white, Aryan, wasp, Gentile. Who knows? I didn't know what he was. We don't study Peter in the synagogue, you understand? So I was like, really? He's like, yeah. I said, no, well, look, Peter, yeah, but Peter doesn't have to go face my parents. You understand what I'm saying? No, I don't really think so. He said, well, look, would you do me one favor? I said, maybe. He said, would you be willing to promise me that at least you'll read the Bible and let God speak to you from the Bible? I said, well, yeah, I don't think it would do any harm to read from the Bible. He said, do you have a Bible? I said, no. He said, come here a second. And he opens up the back of this van, and here is this huge box of brand new Bibles. I mean, cellophane wrapping and all. And he takes one of these Bibles, and he says to me, here. And I said, well, I don't have any money. I can't pay for this. He said, well, I don't want you to pay me anything for this. He said, if you promise me you'll read it, I'll give it to you. Whoa. I mean, this was getting too close to home now. Because on Wednesday, I had said to God, if you're really real, God, you prove to me you're real by giving me a Bible. But folks, where was I going to get a Bible from? The people I hung out with did not walk around handing out Bibles. The odds of somebody giving me a Bible were less than zero. 4 days later, this guy opens his truck and hands me this brand new Bible. And I mean, it was like, I was like, oh man, this is getting too scary here. So I took the Bible. I said, look, I got to go. And I left.